you know, we have time to detoxify my my thoughts. So, and I hope I will have enough time to finish the talk before the lunch time. And everybody will be hungry, including myself. It's like I haven't had dinner today, so that's why I'm from Japan.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the outline. The title is Tracy Quantum Double Model on a couple of basis. And so first I will just briefly introduce motivation and introduction. As I'm sure you have been exposed to Professor Wan's lectures for a while and basically knows most of the background stuff. So just quickly go through it. And then I will introduce the model, how is it defined. After that, I will talk about the constructing topological observables of this model, and then describe the topological quantum numbers associated with these topological observables. And so after these, I will show you the properties of these topological numbers, which will be used to classify the topological phases that can be described by the model, and then show you some examples in the end. If time allows, I will talk about the correspondences of this Tracy quantum double model with other theories, like consignment theories, conformal flow theories, etc. It has been decades since the our understanding of the physics matter has gone beyond the paradigm of Landau-Ginzburg symmetric breaking. So, and now, you know, basically the physics matter can be divided into some classes. So, for example, the so-called short-range entangled states. These include the Landau symmetric breaking basis. So in this case, if there's no global symmetry, then there will be only one trivial phase when if there's no symmetric breaking. And if when symmetry is presented, there would be the so-called symmetry protected topological basis. But this topological, this word topological may be kind of misleading because these spaces are not really topological because they can be transformed into products, kind of product states, major product states. And they are not really topological. But they are not trivial as in the case of Landau symmetry breaking, because there is a global symmetry presented to protecting spaces. So maybe it should be called symmetry protected non-trivial phases or symmetry protected rich phases or whatever. So usually there are some properties of these symmetry protected topological SPD phases. For example, the non-degenerate. Brown states. Or in some cases, gapless edge excitations when there is a boundary. And And as opposed to the scrubber engine Tango 6, there are class of topological, these are basic, the main class of topological faces go involving long-range entanglement. So these are topological faces, the truly topological faces. And here, gaps usually. And the key features of these topological faces are we have degenerate ground states and fractional and statistics of these quasi particle excitations. And most of the tactics. Edge excitations when there's a bundle. So examples of the typical examples of these systems which exhibit these faces are the fractional quantum hole systems and for example the chiral spin liquids. I think you're familiar with this, so I wouldn't spend too much time on this. And then we would like to talk about this classification. Because physicists always like to classify things. In terms of some mathematical in certain mathematical framework. So it has been recently found by Professor Van Tianzhengku and their collaborators that these SPD faces in, for example, D dimensions can be classified by the so-called cohomology group. Group homology group, the D plus one group homology group. But what about this classification of these so called topological faces, which involve long range entanglements? And there is a general framework that may be able to describe all the topological faces that involve this long range entanglement. These are called the skinner models. Also known as Levin models. And it is believed that the tensor category theory is the underlying mathematical framework of these models. But the thing is, we don't really have a clear classification of all these models at the moment, which is available. However, recently there's an interesting observation due to Levin and Gu. Such that the SPT basis with the Z2 symmetry is actually dual to some Levin Van model, so which involves long range entanglements. This is very interesting because this SPT phase involves short range entanglements, but these Levin Van models involve long range entanglements. And then, this is by Levin and Gu. And then the conjecture that this duality can actually be extended to more general cases, for example, Zn and other groups. So, and then as a follow up, it was then confirmed that this duality actually exists for Zn or even other finite groups. By Janet Han and myself.
What is the input on the right hand side that it comes with love?
This is the Levin Van model.
No, I mean if the left hand side is Z2 symmetry, what's on the right hand side? Which model is it?
Oh, this is the Levin Van model with a one string type.
One string.
And then the Feynman rules. So
one is the Ising model, another is the double
Sandian. Yes, double Sandian, double
U1. Double Sandian model.
Okay. Do you want to hold the question?
Yeah, I think there's two STD phase. With Z2 symmetry, then the due to the Z2 gauge theory, and another one is a double Samian model.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting here is that does this actually imply that these Lemma-Lemma models, or at least a class of Lemma-Lemma models, can be also classified by root-color models, because root-color models classify these SPD places. But in fact, it is not that precise, because in the Lemma-Lemma models, the Lemma-Lemma models are actually partially defined by the 6K symbols, which are involved in these models to define the Hamiltonian. But these 6K symbols, the solutions of these 6K symbols to depend on identity actually is restricted due to the tetrahedral symmetry that presents in the Lemma-Lemma model. So the possible Lemma-Lemma models in this class may not exhaust the entire group of models group. But on the other hand, by using this group of models group to classify the SPT faces, one can see that there is a intrinsic branching structure that was brought in by this group of models, such that the tetrahedral symmetry is actually broken. Then we might think that, can we actually find a model, or more generalized model, or a new set of models that do not have this tetrahedral symmetry, and can describe the topological faces that can be fully characterized by this group called model group. So that's the one of the main motivations.
What would be the physical implication if this tetrahedral symmetry is broken? Like, does it correspond to a well-defined T whatever thing?
If
you're able to define these models to exhaust the homology group, what's the implication of breaking the tetrahedral symmetry? Is it a physical theory? Is it like?
I think that's a good question. So it might be related to certain symmetry, for example, time reversal symmetry. As later I can show you an example in the Z3 case, in which there is only one Lemma-Lemma model. But in this, there are three topological quantum double models. One of them is actually dual to the Lemma-Lemma model, and the other two are not dual to any Lemma-Lemma models. And in these two theories, you can see that if you take a complex conjugation of one of them, you go to the other one. But this wasn't in the Lemma-Lemma model, because in Z3 case there is only one Lemma-Lemma model. I'll get to that part later if I have time.
Second question. When you talk about this duality, is it just a correspondence between the cocycle used in the group homology on the left hand side and the 6G symbol used in the right hand side?
This
yeah. Right. Or is it the relation between the theories? So, I mean, the theories on the right is non-degenerate ground states, it cannot be the same on the left. So I just trying to understand what you mean with duality between theories.
The duality is simple between Hamiltonian. So if you have a SPD base divided described by Hamiltonian with a Z to go over symmetry, then under this duality, you can transform into this Lemma-Lemma models, this corresponding Hamiltonian.
But is it just correspondence between the ingredients you use to build up the Hamiltonian, or is it a natural correspondence between the theories?
I think it's natural correspondence between the theories.
But the right hand side is degenerate ground states, and the left hand side is non degenerate ground states.
Well, it's typically a pre gauge of the Gaussian.
Ah, okay, so.
So you gauge the
duality is gauging.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Like a measuring model. And,
exactly. If you gauge this Z2 global symmetry, the gauge the theory became this string.
Okay,
model.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you have to.
It's basically something like that.
You introduce a gauge fields and then gauge fixing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so but then there is another motivation. So
yes, maybe another just comment on the Lucy's question that the tetrahedral symmetry is not necessary, and so it is a mistake and a regret for us to impose that. Actually, at that time, we don't know the branching structure, so we don't know how to get around it. But actually, because topological long-ring entanglement do not require any symmetry, so you are allowed to break any symmetry and then to construct more general model. But when you impose certain symmetries, then you only construct certain kind of model.
Mm.
So I don't know what the type of definition really means physically. It might mean you only construct transversal invariant model if you assume type of symmetry or something of that stuff. I don't know exactly.
Is
what
the tetrahedron
the
same pivotal?
Or? Yeah, basically it means this. I don't know what that means. Really, it's a six-year symbol related to tetrahedral, whether you assume this six-year symbol when commutative mm-hmm. index of certain symmetry or not. And
mm-hmm.
but this became more interesting. For the six-year symbol satisfying tetrahedral symmetry, it means for something this six-year symbol gives you a certain kind of string depth theory which has certain symmetry, but exactly what symmetry. What's corresponding is not totally clear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does this open the possibility that we have chiral theories here, or it's still quantum model?
Yeah, no chiral theory. It's basically all these constructions somehow the entanglement spectrum are fully gapped. It's not, so essentially C minus C dagger is still equal to zero. And but we still know how to go around that.
The other motivation is as we mentioned, the group homology can be used to classify the SAT basis. But actually, the group homology can be also used to classify the cross correspondence between three-dimensional consignment theory and the 2D sigma model with a WCW type interaction. And it turns out that this 3D, you can actually go to higher dimensions, but for the purpose of this talk, we would restrict to 3D and 2D. So the 3D topological transignment theories can be actually characterized by the fourth called Morse group, in Z over Z, and the WCW interactions can be classified by the third one, in Z. However, in the case of finite groups, this fourth Morse group of the classifying space of G over Z is actually isomorphic to the third Morse group of this G over U1. And this is the key point that we're going to use. And because in this finite case, we have this nice isomorphism here, the transignment theory, topological transignment theory with a finite group G can be realized on a lattice, or we can consider a simplicial triangulation of three manifolds. In that case, so this partition function of this transignment theory, this gauge group G, a finite group, can be simply written as this W. This W is called the topological action. Is this defined for each tetrahedron in this simplicial triangulation of this three manifold? So this is the so-called branching structure that is brought in by this group cohomology. You have to offer an ordering of this vertices, so that you can assign arrows from the higher one to the smaller one, and you label the edges by this group elements that lies in the group G. you can write this as G, this is H, this is K. And this guy comes G H. This is H K. This is G H K. Okay, such that on each face there is a sort of flatness condition. So it means H K. The group elements on this H times this H equals group elements on this H 2, 4. So this is 2, 3.
So the fact that you can put it on lattice is because you reduce the fourth cohomology to the third cohomology, you're you're saying because you have that isomorphism, you are able to put it on the lattice.
No, you're able to put it on the lattice, not because of this.
Okay.
You can always study the lattice case, because in most of the cases of the study of topological faces, we are away from the critical point, such that the correlation length is smaller than the cutoff. So we can always study
the lattice.
Yes.
Okay. Can you set something? What is it on the left-hand side again?
Left-hand side?
Yeah.
This is yes.
Left-hand side.
This one is the triangulation of I wish I would have more time on the correspondence between our model and this transignment, this topological transignment theory on simplicial triangulation of a three-manifold later. But at this moment, I wouldn't go much more into this definition.
So I imagine this particular function, that's the one which is studied by Dagraff Witten for the discrete group.
Yeah, it is the one studied by that group.
I see.
Yeah, it is the variable. So now we can see that these, all these threads that can combine to motivate you, that you might be able to define a model in terms of a key thing I have to mention. This guy is a three cycle. If I didn't mention this, it's not motivated. This W lives in this third cohomology group of G over U1. So you might be encouraged to think that you can build a model in terms of the three co-cycles, okay, which doesn't have tetrahedral symmetry because it's manifestly broken, and to describe topological faces and the quadratic particles in these faces. So in another sense, you might be looking for a Hamiltonian extension of the transignment, the topological transignment theory, because this is a topological field theory. There's no degrees of freedom. And its Hamiltonian is actually trivial. So you're actually looking for a Hamiltonian extension, a reasonable one, sensible one, Hamiltonian extension of this topological transignment theory that can be used to describe topological faces and can be classified by group cohomology.
What are the TIs in the TI?
TI is just any tetrahedra.
Oh.
So the union of those tetrahedra, you get the
this
blackboard is designed for Yao Ming. Now let's talk about the model. So we define, so inspired by the transignment theory on the simplicial triangulation of the three manifold, we are going to define our model on a graph. I will just talk about this, describe these basic ingredients first, and then get to the Hamiltonian, and then everything else. So define our model on such a graph. Graph is a planar graph. We can draw it anyway. But it is composed of triangles only. Let's make a small one. So this is just a portion of a bigger graph. So this doesn't, these don't mean open edges. This is a closed graph. So you can enumerate these vertices as in whichever way you like. And then you stick to the global relative order through your calculations. So you can draw and assign arrows from order. Larger labels to the smaller labels. Okay. And then you can group elements on which is in a, so each arrow, you assign a group element onto each edge paired by this labels at the end of this edge, I and J. Set this into be a group element in this finite group. And then you assume that you have this relation. It is inverse. of Qi Hai if you read it from the other way around. So, and then the Hilbert space. It's a little boring at this moment. I'm going through this basic ingredients. But later, it will be more interesting when we get to the properties of the model. So, the Hilbert space is simply G2, G3. So, D equals number of edges. Gamma is this graph. So this is basically just a union of all the possible configurations of group elements on this graph. And this graph can be actually thought as a triangulation of a 2D of a Riemannian surface. But you don't really have to look at it that way. You can just assume it's a kind of abstract graph composed of triangles with group elements taking values in this finite group 2. You know, and just assume that. And, it'll make it more friendly to the community, I think, rather than going into the 3D topology. So, and then you have to think about.
So you see, the bases are labeled by the group element on the edges. So those for each label, you get the basis of many body Hilbert space.
Basis, you mean those triangles?
No, the basis of the Hilbert.
Oh, yes, right. Basis.
Yes.
Right. And then you can actually look at the inner product as defined in the obvious way. So you see something defined C prime. Okay. I ignore the arrows. The arrows all go from the larger one to the same sort of inverse. It's just a delta function. In general, this is important. In general, we don't have such a chain rule. A B dot the group product equals A C. We don't have this in general. But in the construction of topological chain assignment theory, this is always true. Because
with equal sign.
Yes, with equal sign. But here, in general, we don't have it. We don't assume this. Now, what's the Zwickau cycle? So, H3. You don't have to think too much about this sophisticated group homology. You just need to take a Zwickau cycle, is simply a function from the direct product of G three times into U1. Okay. That's it, such that there is a so-called three-code cycle condition. When you take the Cobantry operation of this three-code cycle alpha, you will get alpha, G1, G2, let's make this more complicated. G0, G1, G2, G3. This guy is simply alpha, G1, G2, G3, alpha, G0, G1, G2, G3, minus 1, alpha, G0, G1, G2, G3, alpha, G0, G1, G2, G3, minus 1, alpha, G0, G1, G2. This is actually very easy to memorize by how to assign this minus sign, because it's just there was a queue here with three guys, and the new guy comes. Yes, he wants to push the last guy out of the queue, and this is just the order how it is done. okay? So it's not so hard to memorize. So this is the critical cycle condition. To save some space, let me put the normalization condition here. We also impose this normalization condition, g h equals alpha, g 1 h equals alpha, g h 1 equals this one.
So you can always choose this gate condition.
Yeah, this can be made always true because it is a strict cycle in an equivalence class. So this is not an ad hoc condition that you impose. It is actually a natural one.
What's the meaning of delta alpha? So I see four arguments that G0, G1, G2, G3. Is that the definition of what delta alpha means? Or
yeah, delta alpha has four variables.
Yeah, alpha has three variables.
Okay.
Delta alpha will bring one more variable to the step, makes it a kind of fork code chain.
Okay, but that's the definition of delta alpha.
Yes, this is the definition of delta alpha.
So that's not the condition of this one.
No, no, no.
It's just a definition.
Yeah, alpha has only three variables, G1, G2, G3. When you access a code boundary operator on it, it actually becomes a fork code chain, which has one more variable. But because this is a focal cycle, so it has to satisfy this condition equals one.
Oh, that's the condition.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the one. Thanks. I forgot to put down the equals one. Okay. So the next step is now we have a graph. We have a graph labeled with group elements, the Hilbert space, and we know we can define alpha on this group G. But we need to combine these two things together, so which means we want to define this alpha on the graph. How can we define alpha on gamma?
So I try to say where this little, do you try to using this formula to define a state on the graph?
Yes.
Okay, I see. To construct the state. Okay.
Yes, but alpha is actually not part of the state.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alpha will be the spaces. So we define alpha on any three triangles like this. If this is supposed to be a triangulation of a closed surface, there are actually four triangles. One is actually behind. So let's call these three guys V1, V2, V3. We define an alpha for this particular graph class, V1, V2. So this is the notation that denotes the group elements on this edge from V1 to V2. V2, V3, V3. We define this three-go cycle on such a graph. But keep in mind that on any of these spaces, there is no chain rule like that is assumed. So you can find such an alpha.
But you should have a four alpha because this one has four triangles. Do you have four alpha for this, for the perpendicular you draw?
Yeah, so there is actually an orientation that you need to choose. For example, if you have to meet you here, if you look at it in the other way. Sure. Then this alpha will carry an exponent. Still we want V3, V4. There's a minus sign. And how do you determine whether there's a minus sign or not?
You might want to circle the arrow that you change.
Exactly. It is very simple. You just need to pick any of these three triangles. Any of them. Okay? So you're supposed to choose this V2, V3, V4. And you arrange these, you read off these vertices in the counterclockwise order. Like V2, V3. V4, okay, and then you append the last one, the rest one to the beginning, and then you see how many permutations it'll take to bring this list to a pure ascending order. And this is already ascending, so this is positive. And in this case, you have V3, V2, V4, and V1, and then you need to switch these two guys. So that's an odd permutation, and then it carries a minus sign. This is how you actually translate the orientation of a tetrahedron into this graph picture. So to make things in a more plain language, you don't have to look at the triangulations, the orientation of the tetrahedra or whatsoever. You just need to look at the graph and you can get the signs correctly. So this is how you define these cycles on the graph. Now we are ready to get to the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian is in a very familiar form to you guys as the PDF model or StringDF model. It consists of two parts, the vertex operators and some of the face operators. So the face operator is actually very simple. Let me just briefly write it here. So this PF acts on any face of triangle. Let me omit the arrows just so you know how they're assigned. It's simply impose a zero flux conditional. So this was in the original state, and then after the action of this PF operator, it actually enforces that there's a chain rule going around this triangle, which means there's no flux going through this triangle. So which means this term actually favors zero flux states. And more complicated is this a new term, this vertex operators. A new is actually defined as a sum. Another set of operators in AVG. And this AVG is a local operator on the graph, on any vertex of the graph. Let's take this graph with three triangles as an example. Let's, for simplicity, just write down 1, 2, 3, 4 rather than V1, V2, V3. And this guy gives you what? 3, 5, 3. Oops. And then and then on a new graph. 1, 2, 3. And this guy becomes 3'. So it basically replaced the original vertex that it acts on with a new vertex. And assume that the connection between these two vertices equals a group element 2 that indexes the operator A. If you are familiar with the KDIF model, you can see that this is actually a kind of or Chen Simon theory on superficial compound, on the superficial triangulation, you can actually immediately realize this is sort of gauge transformation.
Excuse me, what does it mean to replace 3 by 3 triangle?
Yes, good question.
And what's the group element between 3 and 3 triangle?
So if you really want to get an intuitive picture of this operation, you probably need to go to this three-dimensional picture on this edge of feature. So originally we have 1, 2, 3, and 4. You can lift this vertex 3 up such that you can view it as a edge of feature. And then what this does is actually it generates a new vertex inside. There's a key gradient I forgot to mention. When you act on this A on any vertex, you assume that the new vertex is actually less than the old one. So you still have this. So this is a general rule of acting this vertex operator on the graph. You assume the new label is little less than the old one, but still greater than the one which was less than the old one. So the purpose of this to make this operation a local operation. So originally we thought we can just assume that the new label can be greater than any of the other labels in this network, in this graph, and that would be a little too kind of non-local. So then a more reasonable way is to assume that the new label is actually a little smaller than the old one. So you have this 3 here. You connect them. You can see that this 3 dashed lines together with the bottom triangle, if we compress down to the backboard, is the new graph here. And this edge here is 3 by 3 equals 2. Is the group element.
So is it okay to think that we also still have 3 in there? In that?
You know, you don't have this. You can look at it as half Hamiltonian evolution of the state. We evolve state into a new state by means of this splitting of tetrahedron. You split the tetrahedron, the original tetrahedron, into 4 tetrahedra, and only keep the final one, the new one. And these are just intermediate steps.
I guess these 20 pads just dummy labels, right?
Yeah.
There's no meaning calling them trio of the pads.
Right.
The vertex is not trivial.
Yeah. One way to look at this is that there's a 1, 2, 4, 3 prime, it's a small pattern picture. Then you add 3 extra tetrahedral to make it a big one, 1, 2, 3.
But are you changing the Hilbert space here in this operation? Hilbert space was defined on a graph.
Yeah, this is part of the Hilbert space. Of the Hilbert space.
When you're changing from a small tetrahedral, lower one, top, or higher one, taller one, but the when you're flatter than they have same Hilbert space.
So the new surface, like this bumped one, is your new surface. Like imagine, it's flat.
So it's a new cooler space, but it's isomorphic to the previous one?
Yeah.
It's all in my head.
And what does it mean, like the 3 prime has an ordering with respect to the old one?
Yeah.
So we label the graph, order the graph on this surface, and
suddenly you always keep the global relative order of these labels, you don't change
them. So all you mean, actually what you mean is that maybe okay, that you actually have also 1 prime, 2 prime, 4 prime, you like to say, and so the 3 prime still.
Yeah, you can actually put primes here.
So in that sense,
in principle, but you can just ignore those primes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can see that these edges, the group elements on these edges, they cannot be arbitrary. They actually determined by this 3 prime and 3. So this imposes these chain rules. 1, 3 prime times 3 prime 3 equals 1, 3. Otherwise, your operation would be too arbitrary.
So, is that you're adding to the formula, or is something that goes there in the formula?
Just a moment.
Smart.
is this something you're adding to the formula or something that was already there in the formula?
You mean this?
Yeah.
This is just conditions naturally imposed by this action of this A3, this vertex operator.
I mean, is something you're adding to make the formula meaningful, or is something that...
I think this df will impose this condition probably.
Yes.
What?
This df term, which is impose this flattening condition. There's another term.
Right.
Df is a projector.
Right.
No, I mean...
Yeah.
Why would it?
No.
It's just some two pieces of the Hamiltonian.
No,
right?
It's not. These conditions are not imposed by df.
But
this is simply by definition, because you actually
defining what
the original region, right?
Yeah.
And with a new group element here. And then these three guys cannot be just arbitrary.
Is
it has to be determined by this.
But earlier you said that you don't impose that because we're not in turn Simon. So you don't impose the fact that.
Right,
but
you
but
impose the chain rules of all these triangles. That's why you can see. You can actually define a three cocycle on each of these four tetrahedra, right? But actually five, including the biggest one here. There are five three cocycles, but there is no a three cocycle condition that can be imposed on these five three cocycles because you don't have this chain rule on all these triangles. You can only have this chain rule on the three cocycles defined on all the four or all the five tetrahedra to have this this rule only when you can have this chain rule on each of these places.
Is it correct to say that you're just telling us what group element do you put on the right-hand side
yes.
in the picture?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're determined by this.
But I mean, just that's your prescription. There was no other thing that was imposing, just your definition of the Hamiltonian. Mm-hmm. So for either vertex, it's not trivalent to just have, I don't know, four alphas for tetravalent and so on. I mean, this vertex or this graph didn't have to be trivalent, right? You gave the formula for a trivalent vertex.
Equivalent?
Trivalent. Yeah, so for a generic vertex, you have n alphas. And
you mean, yeah.
It didn't have to be trivalent, right?
Yeah, of course, it can be any valent. You can define this then. That's the next point. You can extend the definition of this A on any valences. Or the vertex with any valence. And you just have more alphas here. That's what you do.
So it relates to the original, so those three equations, blue ones, you wrote down, they relate to the original Gitaev model. I mean, if you take away the alphas, then the new labeling for the new edge is just going to be G times the original labeling, which was like in the Gitaev model, right?
It is Gitaev model,
just don't have
alphas are trivial.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
So basically, so this define negative. So this model define the ground state of this model have a topological order, you know, this Langring time supposedly. I see. So up to trivial, you actually define some kind of gate theory of the Gitaev model.
Exactly.
And I see. They say then for different choice of cocycle, you're actually operating some kind of generalization.
Yes. You're twisting the origin of the Gitaev model actually.
I see.
The quantum Gitaev model. So that's why it's called twisted.
I see. So another point I think maybe they can be viewed, you know, in that graph Witten they describe this kind of Hamiltonian, sorry, passive Lagrangian description of some kind of discrete group chain Simon theory. So this probably can be regarded as a Hamiltonian description
exactly.
of a chain Simon theory with a discrete group.
Yes, that's what I just mentioned.
Oh, I see.
That's Hamiltonian extension. So, and you can see there's a key difference between this model and the level mainstream string net model. In this model, this vertex operators A is independent of the definition of the space operators. So you don't really need this zero flux conditions on triangles such that this A is defined. This A can be defined on any kind of graph without this rules.
But somehow there's some difference between the space-like and time-like triangles. So the time-like ones seems to satisfy that thing that you were saying.
I don't know.
Well, like, but look, that's what you're right. Like, I mean, the space-like one you're saying that does not satisfy the multiplication of the triangle branch.
Well, if you really view that as kind of time evolution, then maybe you can say that. But honestly, I don't understand what this time here is. So because this is just a zero temperature model of most of this.
So basically, you can really simulate some kind of discrete chain summon theory using Hamiltonian.
Right.
But then, is this Hamiltonian going to be used for time evolution or for a thermal partition function? Or does it matter? I mean, what are you going to do with this Hamiltonian? Or are you looking for the zero, for the ground space of this Hamiltonian?
Yeah.
I'm going to look for the ground states of this Hamiltonian. And the topology for observables on this ground states, which can be used to generate topological numbers that can classify the topological physics. That's what we're going to do with this Hamiltonian.
Maybe one comment is that I think that's magic. If you only give it the Lagrange, people say this model is not defined. When we give it Hamiltonian, say, oh, it's defined.
So this Hamiltonian description is only for double Hamiltonian.
Actually, this is a financial project. I don't know.
That's a very good question, because in the end, you can see that there's a correspondence between this model and rational conformal field theories, in the sense that the ground state generality is exactly the same as the number of primary fields in this rational conformal field theories. I haven't got to those definitions yet, but the characters of this, you will see those so-called beta A irreducible projective representations of centralizers of some group elements, blah, blah, blah. These guys are actually the same. Well, I should say it's the same, but analogous to the one loop holomorphic characters in the rational conformal field theories. But only to the holomorphic sector. So from transcendent theory to rational conformal field theory, actually complete this correspondence, you need actually get the anti-holomorphic sector.
Mm-hmm.
But our model only corresponds to the holomorphic sector rather than
both. But actually, there's a real issue here. Now you have a Hamiltonian. You can ask, suppose my system have a boundary.
Sorry.
And you can add some perturbation on the boundary to make things have a dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Then you ask, well, the boundary have an equal number right mover or left mover or not? I think the answer probably for finite group answer is yes. That is the central charge for the edge station C and the C dagger, or C and the C bar are the same. That's my understanding. I don't know how to prove that, but the one way to prove this probably is that this model probably have a fixed point model, maybe the ground state have this tensor network representation, again using finite dimension. Probably
there's actually a
point for this, because we know that for continuous group chain summon theory, they are chiral. And I kind of wondering if you generalize this to the continuous group, whether you actually get a Hamiltonian, which you realize this is so-called chiral chain summon theory, where on the boundaries, the C and the C bar is different. You really have a chiral edge state. So that is But for discrete group, I don't know. For discrete, I suspect it is a non-chiral in a sense.
Non-chiral.
It's non-chiral.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you know how many ground states we have on the Riemann surface? You know how many ground states to get on the Riemann surface?
How many ground states
on the
Riemann
surface? How many ground states?
Ground states.
Ground states.
Yeah, ground states.
Zero energy.
it's just the ground state degeneracy on the sun. I will get to that to that point later.
Maybe we have a good point. It's probably about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's just
probably still half in the
hair. Maybe I can even skip things like this. Save time, let me just forget about the middle one.
What about enhances the main features? And we continue in the afternoon? I know that you cannot repeat it in the afternoon, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, can we continue in the afternoon?
Is it good for
you? I don't mind.
Okay, yeah.
Because you have to leave at 1:30, you have to be gone.
Yeah, I'll have other things. So maybe you can arrange. So what time? No, that's up to you. What time?
Right. So
actually, are you thinking about
what's the time now?
It's 12.
It's already 12.
Oh, it's already 12.
Yeah. I basically talking about nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's continue now.
Let's continue.
So we have a colloquium at 2:00. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Colloquium at 2:00.
So maybe after colloquium, it would be nice. So like 3:30.
3:30. Yeah. Would that work?
Yeah.
Do we need to look this room? Probably this. Somebody check.
Okay. Maybe you can
announce these answer these questions, say how, just give a schedule.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I talk about nothing. Like if I haven't got to.
Yeah, I was
like,
you haven't managed.
Just define a model, which doesn't make any sense.
No, but that's already very
interesting.
Yeah. That's
already. But I think he has more.
For every cycle, you get Hamiltonian. You can simulate. I think I'm putting the computer. But actually, I don't know for the finite group, is that clear that C equal to C dagger?
I'm not sure about this.
In the chain Simon theory. That's really interesting because we have a hard time
I'm not sure
to have a chiral theory. Because for the continuous group, when you write down chain Simon theory, we say, okay, you only have a right mover, not a left mover. But for the finite group, I'm less clear. But I suspect for any finite group chain Simon theory, for somehow C equal to C dagger. But for the reason which I don't know, because as you don't emphasize, here we don't have penetrative symmetry, so we don't have a time-versus symmetry. So it is okay to have time.
I think C minus C bar is supposed to be the gravitational anomaly.
Yes, that's gravitational
anomaly. It's a gravitational chain Simons.
So somehow it's really like to say that for finite group, the theory have no gravitational anomaly, but for continuous group, there are gravitational anomaly.
But
so that's quite amazing if that's true.
But you already mentioned that that there is mapping to rational CFTs, where you only reproduce the holographic, the holomorphic part. So that is already very, seems to indicate that it's chiral.
We thought the model would lead to chiral theory in the beginning because it breaks the tetrahedral symmetry without that issue.
Maybe I should be more cautious. Maybe even for finite group, they could be chiral. Well, that would be really remarkable because we finally have a model.
But then we simulated it on a sphere.
Yeah.
But it didn't work. It didn't give us chiral theory.
So I thought that one could construct this Kitaen model, twisted and coded from double dagger. So I mean, the Kitaen model is supposed to be somehow a dagger-ridden kind of tensor's dual. So I mean, you always have the anti part with it supposedly, right? Include the twisted one because the twist is already in the dagger. So you do this construction generally, you should get this model.
Yeah.
So mathematically speaking.
Yeah.
So,
but the only question is that for finite group, whether you can obtain a model with a chiral edge, I think that's the key.
I mean, that's not Kitaen construction. You have to go out of that. Probably.
Of course, yeah. I know that for finite group, the model is that soluble, and the ground state have exact tensor natural expression. If the x is have to be chiral, then you finally have an answer. Yeah, we have a tensor natural state, which is really chiral. But on the other hand, I feel because we have that, that's the reason I say.
But this is again.
This is not
chiral. Sum of commuting projector. Right?
Yeah, this is sum of commuting projector.
This
yes.
This is sum of. So automatically you have tensor memory information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not happens. But they're also saying that when the ground state is a ground state of sum of commuting projector, it has to be non chiral. I don't know. Yeah, this is really coming very close to our effort to try to build a gas-soluble chiral model. Maybe you should stop here and then you can continue at 1:30. Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.